Right, this is an interview with Clive Welford for the Dialect Project. Thanks, Clive, for agreeing to take part. We really, as it says, Dialect Project, we wondered if, you know, we would pick up any particular words from your commentary. But could I just ask you to give your full name and a little bit about your background?
Well, my name's Joseph Lawrence Clive Welford. I was born at Home Farm, Roxby, 26th of the 4th, 54. I was brought up there, the only son of Jossie and Hazel Welford, and I was brought up at Home Farm with my three sisters, older sisters. The old farmers in them days congregated at the farmhouse for threshing days, and I heard a lot of dialect in them days, but I'm afraid it's dying out now. People like Jack America, it was their everyday language. They just come naturally to them. But it's getting harder and harder to find anyone who'll really speak the language now. But you still hear it occasionally in the pub when the folks are telling stories about old Jack. It usually ends up with a bit of dialect. And anyway, I went to Roxby School. Started at 5 year old. It was a village school about half a mile from home. I walked there every day, and I think there were happy days. I don't know if everyone at the school thought that, but I certainly did. We went on school trips to Scarborough, and sometimes on a educational trip to Middlesbrough, to the Albert Park and the museum there, and we found that very interesting. It was a busy farm at Roxby, and my father farmed in partnership with his uncle, and It was a beef, dairy, sheep. It was a proper mixed farm. Beef, dairy, sheep, grew potatoes, turnips, wheat, oats, barley. And as I said, we met up with the neighbours on threshing days. And sometimes when we were doing the poultry for Christmas, they would come in. When it comes to America Jack, he was a distant relative. There's that many Welfords about this area that I couldn't quite tell you just where, just how we're related to him, but I think his father was my grandfather's cousin or something like that. They were always telling stories about Jack whenever farmers congregated. He used to turn up now and again if he needed a bit of hand with anything. And I say he was a distant relative, but he was a close neighbour. When we lived at Moor House at Roxby, his sheep were running on the adjoining moor to ours. And so we come in contact with him quite often. He usually had a bit of a story to tell, and other people had stories to tell about him. There was one particular story about when he was judging sheepdog trials at Barnby Shaw. The sheepdog trial went very well, but when they got finished, there was a latecomer turned up. who'd been to another trial in another area and had rushed back to Barnby. And he asked Jack if he could run his dog. Well, Jack had finished the judging and got his paperwork done, and he said that the chap was too late. Anyway, this chap was fairly insistent that he should run his dog, and so Jack sent him to see the committee men. The committee men were concerned at what to do, and they didn't want to upset this chap, and yet they didn't want to spoil Jack's paperwork, so they said, well, Jack's judging trial, you let her go and get him to make decision. So the fellow went back to Jack and he said, come on then, Mr. Welford, are you going to let me run my dog or not? And Jack said, why? He said, aye. He said, go on then. He said, thou can run the dog. But he said, thou won't win out. And chap run his dog and he never won out. And that was the end of the story. And it was stories like that that people used to tell about Jack whenever farmers met up.
Yeah.
He was quick-witted fellow, was Jack, and he usually had a sharp answer for anybody who asked him a question. I remember once a chap called Lance said to him, hey, Jack, I've got a bad horse. And Jack said, why, those never had a good one. And things like that have lasted for years after Jack's died, and they're still talked about whenever farmers meet up. But he was a kind-hearted and a helpful neighbour, and if ever any sheep got mixed up, he was always ready to help sort them out, and do what best he could for everybody. He was a member of Swaledale Sheep Breeders Association and Blackfriars Sheep Breeders Association. I did put pen to paper after he died and wrote a bit of a poem. Another thing, Jack was very, very good at writing poems. He wrote them about all his friends and neighbours. Luckily, some of them have survived, but a lot of them haven't. A lot of them he never wrote down. He just recited them now and again. But he never put his name to them. And so when I wrote one about him, I never put my name to that neither. But somebody once asked me if I'd wrote a dialect poem about Jack. And I said no, but I wrote one about his brother. So that's something that you might be interested in having a look at later. And
is that yours? Yeah. It's got anonymous on.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. They all have, because as Jack once said, you don't know who's going to be reading them, because they got passed from hand to hand.
Yeah.
Rivet Mart and various places. There was a story about Jack selling somebody a sheepdog at Gisborough, and the man asked him how much he wanted for the dog, and Jack said £5. And so the bloke bought the dog and took it home to his farm, and it turned out to be a real good dog. It lasted him quite a few years, but as what happens, the dog died, so the farmer went back to Jack and said, that dog you sold me for £5, Jack, I'm afraid it's died. Have you another one? And Jack said, yes, I've got one for sale. And the farmer said, well, how much is it? Jack says, £4.10 to you. And the bloke said, well, that sounds cheap, I'll have it. So he took it away, and a few weeks later he met Jack at Rivet Mart, And he said to Jack, that dog you sold me, it isn't quite as good as the first one I got. And Jack said, no, it wouldn't be. It wasn't as much money, was it? And things, stories like that have been handed down and handed around.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I say, he was...
Because he was a horseman as well.
He was a horseman, Cleveland Bears. He was on good terms with my father and grandfather, who bred Cleveland Bears as well.
Did they? Yeah.
And Jack was well known for his horses. He was the last man shepherding on horseback round here. And he was still riding horses up till he died, although he had a Land Rover as well. It was a comical vehicle because I think it had a broken spring at some time and he never got it repaired, and when you followed him along the road, it was always down at one side. In fact, I think he wrote a poem himself about it.
He had a sense of humour, didn't he?
He had a very, very sharp sense of humour, yeah. Very droll sense of humour. I don't know how many poems he did write over the years, but as I said, it was a lot, and a lot of them were never written down. Mm. But luckily, a few have survived.
Yeah.
And I see you've got a photo there of Jack on his horse meeting the Midland Bank bus. I think it is.
But, yeah, I think that might be in the book as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of these are in here. Yeah, you know the photographs, obviously.
Aye.
Yeah.
But, so.
But when you left school, you went to work on the farm, did you? At Roxby?
Yeah, we were at home farm at Roxby, and as I said before, my father was farming in partnership with his brother, Robert. My father took ill. In the late 60s, and he retired to a smaller farm, which is Moorhouse at Roxby, and he gave up his partnership with his brother and retired to this smaller farm, and he died in 1970 when I was about 15,
right.
And I carried on farming at Moorhouse, which is at the sheep stray joining Jack's sheep stray.
Swaledale sheep?
Yeah. And Swaledale and Scotch, yeah. And we farmed there till 1991. It was only a small place, 30 acre plus or more.
30 acre?
Yeah.
That's very small, isn't it?
Yeah. And in 1991, we got chance of Roxby Moor Farm, which was on the same estate, and we moved up here in 91. And we ended up with about 200 acre altogether. So it was more of a worthwhile situation. And while we were at Moorhouse, I did quite a lot of outside contract work, sheep shearing, fencing, hedge laying, dry stone walling, jobs like that. And I give all that up when we moved up here in 91. We had some good success with beef cattle at the Shores and Sales in the early 90s. Won Rusup Suckler Sale a couple of times and Stokesley Market.
And what breed were those?
Surprisingly enough, we won three championships in 3 years with three different breeds.
Right.
The first was a Charolais bullock, and which made £880, which was a good price in them days, about 1995. The following year, we won with a Limousin bullock at Rusup, and the following year, 96, we won with a Belgian Blue at Stokesley. So we had some good success with the beef cattle. Unfortunately, in 96, there was a VSE outbreak.
Oh, yeah.
And that jiggered the beef cattle job up for the next few years. So I revived the contracting part of the business, and I never went back sheep clipping because I considered I was over hard to do it. And I was only 39, like. And but the fencing and edge lane and dry stone walling, I revived that, and it helped to keep the farm going for the next few years until the cattle job picked up again. And I was lucky enough to win a couple of rosettes at edge lane competitions, and I was very pleased about that. And we did quite a bit of showing around the local shows, Acton, Danby, Hinderwell and Rosedale, and we had quite a bit of success.
With your beef cattle?
With the beef cattle and with sheep as well. So, all in all, we did all right. And we've done all right since. The foot and mouth fiasco was a bit of a bad time, but we were within a few miles of the nearest outbreak, but we were lucky to keep clear. And
2001,
aye.
Yeah.
And so we managed to keep clear of that, and things picked up after that, and things are going all right now on the farm.
So what are you doing now on the farm?
Beef cattle and sheep.
Right.
I've retired from the contracting part. I'm eligible for my bus pass now, and so we're just ticking over. My son has a small farm adjoining, and he helps up here as well, and between us we manage very well. So
your son's got a farm.
Yes. He has a small farm just over the fields.
And what do you call your son?
Joe. And he's very good with the stock, and he helps other neighbours as well with theirs, and keeps cattle and sheep of his own.
But he got his knowledge from you, of course, I presume.
Well, I would like to think so. But he's also picked a lot up by working at other places, and he goes sheep shearing.
He does contracting as well.
Yeah.
All right.
And so it's carried on.
Mm.
I see this picture of Jack with his horse was took up on Newton Moor.
Is that where it was?
Yeah, on a snowy day by the look of it. But when it comes to dialect, You'll go a long way before you meet anyone who talked to you like Jack did. It came naturally to him, and that's probably why they were so keen at interviewing him.
And he wrote in dialect sometimes, didn't he?
Yeah. As I say, the only dialect poem that I wrote was about Jack's brother. But
that being published?
No. Right. No, it took me 40 years to write it.
It must be a long poem.
It's 3 pages, yeah. Yeah. Because
this poem you wrote in here, I was only reading this the other week, and I was thinking, I go to a folk club at Mickleby.
Oh, yeah.
There's something I do poems, and I thought that would be a good one.
Right.
I mean, Mickleby's not far from this area.
No, that's right. It's just over Overt Hill there.
Did your father have Cleveland Bays as well?
Aye, he did, yeah. And my grandfather.
And did they show them at all?
Yes, they did. They did show them. Well, it started off In the 1920s, my grandmother was given a Cleveland Bay mare by her father called Roxby Daisy. She got it in fall, but unfortunately it died when it was falling.
Oh dear.
But the foal survived, and she reared it up by hand, and she called it Glendare. And after a few years, she was given a Cleveland Bay mare by Jack's father, George Welford from America House. She was given an old Cleveland Bay mare to try and get her going again.
Mm. Yeah.
And that bred a couple of foals, one called Glen Home, which was after the home farm, and it ended up going to America. She bred a filly called Star of Hope. By the way, that old mare was called Star of the Sea.
Right.
Although some people called her the old America House mare, because she'd come off Jack's farm.
Right. Mm.
She bred a filly called Star of Hope, which, when put to a stallion called Lord Broughton, bred a couple of decent colts. One of them was Morning Star, who went to America, and one was called Invincible that went to New Zealand. Morning Star in particular was a very successful show stallion. My grandfather was William Welford of Home Farm, Roxby, but he was always known as Tashy because of his big handlebar moustache. His favourite saying was Morning Star was never beat, because he took it round the shows for the first 2 or 3 years before it was exported, and it was never beat in the show ring, and he never missed an opportunity to tell that tale that Morning Star was never beat.
Went to America, though.
Went to America, yeah.
My family bred Cleveland Bays at Westerdale.
Right.
And, Westerdale Madam was
I've
one.
I've heard a bit, yeah.
Well, that was our family. That was my family.
Right.
Yeah.
Ah, very good.
Mm.
And, it's very interesting because there was very few about, but they were scattered around this area in ones and twos, weren't they?
Because the chap down the road here... he bred...
My grandfather liked to talk about Cleveland Bays. There was one threshing day when they were all sat around having their dinner, and someone nudged someone else and said, ask old Tashy if he's ever heard of the George the Fifth Cup. So this young man said to my grandfather, have you ever heard of the George the Fifth Cup, William? And William replied fairly quickly, heard about it, young man. I had it up on my shelf for 10 years. Which was true. Morning Star had won it 2 or 3 times.
Right.
His other stallion had won it once. And then it came the Second World War, and so there was no shows.
Mm.
And so he managed to have it on his shelf for 10 years.
Right.
This cup.
So that was a cup for Cleveland Bears.
That was a cup for Cleveland Bears stallions given at the... Cleveland Short Wrecker.
Right.
And it was about the best. If you won that, you usually had about the best in the country.
Because the Queen was interested in...
Yeah, she bought one from America House, and she also bought one off Lee. And she bought one off Wolf and Dale House.
Right.
Which was called Mulgrave Supreme. Which was due to be exported to America.
Yeah, that was, I think, the sire of Westerdale Madam, I think.
Right,
Would that be right?
It probably would be, yeah. And that one went to the Royal Mews, and it was brought back into this area to be used on the local mares, and with good success.
Did you know Ruth Kitchen then?
Yes, I knew Ruth, yeah. Not very well, but I met her a few times. And she, if it was down to anyone else to save the Cleveland Bears, it was Ruth that did it.
Right.
She had Jack helping her and Justin, one or two more, and David. I haven't heard anything last year or two, but they did have them right up till last few years.
Yeah.
But they'll be same as all of us, they'll be getting old now. So whether there's any younger generation carrying on, I don't know.
Is the Cleveland Society still extant?
It's still active. Unfortunately, most of the members are now down south, but there still is a few members up north. They do say there's a bit of a split in the society now, because some people are wanting to stick to the old-fashioned type of Cleveland Bears, and other people are wanting to breed them more for sporting and...
Oh, I heard that there was trying to introduce a different bloodline or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It caused a schism, didn't it?
Yeah. But hopefully they'll get their problem sorted out and the breed will continue to thrive.
Like, did you like horses then? I mean, were you...
Well, I had a bit of a bad experience with horses because Jack America's son, Brian, used to ride a horse to Roxby School, and he used to come plodding down the road on this horse with its head down and tie it up in the blacksmith shop and then go home on a night. Well, one day he asked me to go around to America House to see some old tractors that they had, and of course I jumped up on the horse behind him. And he went like a bloody rocket back to America House as fast as ever he could go. And I was hanging up back, and I think he put me off horses a bit. But by the time I'd got grown up, my sisters had ponies, but we had no Cleveland Bears left then.
Our last one went in 1963.
Right. So what farm were they on then?
Daleview, Westerdale.
Right.
Mortimer's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew the two Mortimer brothers good, because I bought some sheep. The chap who took over Daleview eventually sold the sheep off, or some of them. He had a farm sale, and I remember going and buying a few Gimmel lambs at that sale.
They like the Swaledales.
Yeah, they were good. They were good stockmen with the Mortimers, renowned for their sheep and cattle, and they had a good farm as well up there.
Thank you.
Daleview. Aye, so how are we doing?
Lovely, that's very interesting. Very interesting.
You're still farming now, though.
Yeah, we have about 35 suckle cows, a couple of hundred sheep. I see you've got a photo of the old wheel shed there.
Where was that?
That was at America House.
That was America House.
Yeah,
I think it might be a few things in here. Yeah, there's some of his poems in here as well.
So you'll have changed a lot with the breeds of beef cattle. Since your dad was farming to what you're doing now, did you start off with beef short horn?
Well, they had beef short horns up till the early 60s, and then they went on to Aberdeen Angus. They had a good trade for them for a lot of years. The Co-op was their best buyer. They used to take them to Russet Mart, and then they went on to the Hereford. And I used the Hereford until I started using the Continental breeds. But having said that, a couple of years ago we run a short horn bull, and to get a few heifers to keep for cows. The Continentals are all right, but they need a lot of feeding, and they don't thrive so well on grasses and native breeds. So we have quite a few short horns running at present, and but we also use the Sharrow label, and so we've gone that down that road. I think getting back to my grandfather and his Cleveland Bears, he always said that someone always said that he had a lot of Cleveland Bears, but he never had a good one. Well then, that was because he actually had the best one in the country at the time, the one that that won the King George's Cup quite a few years. But the Cleveland Bear people often spoke like that, but you never heard them praising each other very much. If anybody's foal was born with a bent leg, news would get round like wildfire. But and they were always writing poems about each other, which sometimes appeared in print and other times never. But I see you've got a picture of Jack there.
Is that Ruth?
Yeah, it looks like it. Looks like it. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. He always had his pipe with him.
Ruth was in Fryop, wasn't she?
She was in Fryopdale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fryop Gill. And she was a good supporter of the local community, young farmers, and Ayrshire Cattle Society. And she used to often be president at local shows, and was a real good ambassador for Cleveland Bear Breed.
Where did she come from? Do you know? I mean, was she local?
Well, she hails from over at Pickering.
Oh, right.
So
she had a passion for them.
Yeah.
I was interested to hear you say you were a stonewaller as well. How did you get them skills? I mean, you just by being on the farm and...
Well, the stonewalling was something we had to do at Moor House because we had a wall running between Roxbury Moor and Borrowby Moor. And we had to maintain that, so I picked up on the stone wall in there, got practicing, and took it from there. The hedge lane, Jack's brother Tot taught me that. I actually nicked a few days off school to learn hedge lane because Jack's brother Tot was laying a hedge. He worked as a gamekeeper and woodman on the estate, and he was laying a hedge on our farm, and I was very, very interested in learning how to do it, so I nicked a few days off school and went and helped him, and he showed me how to go on. And luckily I must have learned a few good lessons off him because as I say, I went on to win a couple of prizes in edge lane competitions and get plenty of work locally when I was contracting to do that.
Yeah. Has Roxby Estate stayed in the same ownership?
Yeah.
Yes, and who was the owner of the estate then?
The owners of the Turton family of Upsall Castle at first.
Of course
first.
They are, yeah.
And
just seen the name around the blacksmiths, haven't I?
Yeah, Turton Cottages.
Yeah, because they own the forge down there with the horseshoe.
That's right. One at Upsall, isn't they?
Almost
the same, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're very good landlords, is the Turton family.
Yeah.
And they've owned the estate for several five or six generations. And we've been on the estate for five or six generations. So,
did you have anything to do with the Mulgrave estate?
No, nothing to do with the Mulgrave estate, no.
No,
no. No, I I did quite a bit of work on the Kildale estate of fencing and that, and on Commondale and Grinkle. But Mulgrave estate were heavily into shooting at that time, and but they've changed direction a little bit now. So,
because the Kildale estate, they're doing quite a bit of archaeological digs on that now at the moment.
Did
you ever come across anything on the farm, like coins or anything?
No, I didn't. I've never come across any coins, but we had archaeologists digging round at Moorhouse for 8 years in an Iron Age settlement.
Oh, right.
They discovered it. Apparently, the Teesside amateur archaeologists give a talk to the local flying club in return for a trip around in a light aeroplane looking for archaeology. They come across some hut circles that they spotted from the aircraft, and they approached me to see if they could dig, and I agreed, if provided my landlord had no objections. And they were there most weekends for 8 years. They wrote a very good report about it, which won a few prizes, and the proved that it was what they thought it was, a late Iron Age village. Unfortunately, the late Iron Age men didn't have a lot of anything that was valuable.
I was going to say, they wouldn't have much gold or anything like
that. They found a few corn stones, like little hand mills, and various pieces of pottery, things like that.
So where was that digger?
That was on Roxby Low Moor.
Right.
That's round at Roxby. And so I got to know them very well, and I've been interested in local history since I was at Roxby School. So the head of this dig, Dr. He did send me quite a lot of information, copies of old maps and copies of old documents about Roxby. So it was an enjoyable and interesting time, really, having the archaeologists there. They once said to me that the Iron Age people didn't have a very good time up there, because the land wasn't good enough, and they soon moved on. And I said, I know how they feel. I think I'll be doing the same thing. But anyway, we eventually moved away from there, but we still have the land, so we should run some sheep on the land.
You've stuck it out.
Yeah.
It's not an easy life, is it?
No, not on this type of land. No. But, but I've always been interested in the local history.
What about dogs?
Dogs?
Did you ever have dogs and, you know, like...
Yeah, I had dogs when I was young. But we've had dogs, we had sheep dogs. It's a bit like my grandfather and his horses. We had plenty of dogs, but I don't think I ever had a good one. Not one would want a sheepdog trial anyway.
Yeah.
But what about America Jack? Was he a dog man?
Oh, he was a dog man, yeah.
Because you more or less hear about his horses, right?
Yeah,
his
dog. He judged sheepdog trials and sold a few sheepdogs, as I've said earlier. Yeah. And but he did once say that no dog was worth any more than a thank you. So, whether he'd had a bad one or two or not, I don't know.
Fascinating, yeah.
So when you were a lad, you'd go to Sunday school, did you?
We went to the Catholic school down at Stairs, Catholic church down at Stairs.
Oh, right.
And but there was ones in the village who went to the Sunday school up at Scaling.
Right.
There was a quite a few chapel, what we call chapel folk in Roxby, the Legs, the Bulls.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And others, the Wrens from Dale House and that.
The chapel at Scaling, was
there? There was a little chapel at Scaling, yeah.
Yes.
Is
that
that?
Yeah. It's a house now.
It's a house.
Yeah. Parters at, Welford's, and I think they're all in Parters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a Welford lives there that goes to Pauline's Gannon Club.
Yes, that's Ed's son and daughter-in-law. What's the dairy farmer, isn't he? Andy. It's Andy,
yeah.
Andy's wife.
Yeah, Wendy.
Not Wendy. No. Anyway, she goes to Pauline's Club, yeah.
Barbara. My father and Ed's father were cousins. Ed was married to Bun, who died just recently. So they're fairly close relatives.
And our postman, Bernard, he was a...
Oh, yeah.
So you wouldn't probably get away for many holidays when you were a lad?
Didn't have any holidays.
No.
But apart from once I went to Steers, my sister had got married and lived at bottom of Steers Bank, and I went down there for a week among the fishing community, which was very interesting indeed. Mm-hmm. I actually went out with one of the fishing boats.
Did you?
And
Cobble,
yeah. Yeah. Mm. I think the chap was called Harrison, if I remember rightly.
Mm.
But he took me under his wing, and I've watched him baiting the lines and getting the crab pots and that ready. And it was a really interesting change from farming.
Mm.
How old were you then?
About 11 or 12.
12, right.
Yeah, so I went to Steers.
You like the sea then?
Well, not really. I prefer to be inland. I like the moors and the forests.
And
I don't have much time for sea really, but I did find that week's holiday at Steers interesting.
Yeah.
Were you a nature lad then? I mean, what about birds, eggs and things like that?
Well, we all seemed to collect birds' eggs in them days, but we only ever took one out of a nest. Of course, it's frowned upon now, and it's... There's that many birds have got very scarce that it isn't something that's happened now. But we did gather a few when we were young.
You're very respectful, though.
Just one of each species.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a couple of dozen maybe at one time, but
Did you play quoits then?
No, but there was two quoits pitches at Roxby before my time, but I never got into. Playing, we used to play football and cricket and hide and seek and all things like that. We were into riding old bikes and making sledges and all things like that.
You mentioned the woods as well. You obviously liked the woods, did you?
Yeah, well, I did a lot of woodland fencing for the Kildare Estate.
Right.
And they actually won prizes years ago for the quality of their woodland management.
Right.
And it was nice to see the different trees, different stands of trees, various types on the Kildare Estate.
Yeah.
But.
Of course, now they've got to the age where they're taking those down now, aren't
that's
they?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aye.
But there's some ancient woods around here, isn't there? I mean.
Yeah, there's some very ancient woods, Roxby Woods, mentioned in the Domesday Book, and it's been managed since then. The estate felled some big oak trees a few years ago that had been planted maybe 300 years since. and they also replanted it. So there's some good young trees growing on the estate. Lord Tranmere, who was formerly Sir Robin Turton, he was very interested in the woods on Roxby, and he planted a lot of trees, and a lot of them will be around for a lot of years to come.
That was excellent, yeah. Can we ask you some of these questions now, Clive?
These are sort of...
These are what everybody who's interviewed, because this project all over the country, and it was done, say, 50 years ago, and they're trying to repeat it. They want to see also different parts of the country, but have people different names for the same thing, basically.
Yeah.
So... I'll get these right for Albert to show you. I don't know those questions first, Albert.
I put my glasses on.
You've done the first ones, haven't we?
Mm. Yeah, where did you grow up? We've done that. Where do you live now? Right, we're on to the picture.
Is that the number one, is it?
Yeah, number one.
Right, well, what would you call that, Clive?
Well, I know a proper name for it, but we used to call them Hutchins years ago.
Used to call them what?
Hutchins.
Hutchins?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. That's different. You take it as a hedgehog, do you?
Yeah.
Nothing normal.
And that one?
Daddy Long Legs.
Yeah.
And that one?
These are Twitchy Bell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now then, you've got me there. I know that type of stuff, it plugs to your legs
and
sticks to your all over, but I don't know what to call it.
Right, that's all right. I'm not doing long work. And that's just a drop of water on the end of a piece of...
I don't know what I would call that.
Right, it's all right.
A drop of water on the end of a piece
What would you call those if you went to the shop to buy some of those?
Goodies.
Yep.
Right.
And your name for these small bread?
Well, we would just call them bread buns then.
Yep. And, oh, that's right. What's this question? What's one of those? You can get cheese ones or fruit ones or...
Scone.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And those?
Scallion onions, are they?
Yep. And... That girl is giving that boy a what?
Piggyback.
Yeah. And that is a...
Seesaw.
Yeah.
Right, hold on a minute. Oh, this is a... There's a word missing in there. The sentence is, the food was something tasty. So if you can choose a word... If you can choose a word from that list. Let's unravel it a bit. Making it worse or better. There's about 9 words. Which word would you use to go in that space there?
I would just say it was really tasty.
Right, thank you. So where are we up to now on that? So done that.
Finger on this.
Right, turn it, so.
This side. Do you have any further dialect words or expressions that you use? You know, I mean, or your dad used? Or?
They used to always say if they were busy, they were thrang.
What was that again?
Thrang. If thrang. You were busy.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
as I say, I wrote this poem in dialect about Jack America's brother. And
would you like to read a bit of that? I mean,
well, I can read it if you want.
Yes,
I've got
please.
It here,
yes,
but,
please. Yeah.
And this is what you wrote?
It took me years to write it. I thought about it a lot.
Right.
It's a dialect poem that recalls a memorable night when I went to see an odd chap called Tut. He was a gamekeeper come woodman. He was retired. And I heard tell that he'd got barred from pub. So I went down to see him, and I had a new gun that I'd just bought, and I thought I would show him that as well, because he was a shooting man, he was a gamekeeper. So I wrote this bit of a poem. Yeah, neat, I went to see our Tut, to show him a fresh gun I'd got. But I found our Tut was hopping mad, and he told me what a time he'd had. He'd been barred from pub the week afore. The landlord there had shown him door. Tut said, I never did nout wrong, but with barring folk he has been thrang. Then there's Jerry Builders runs about this village every day. They only come to pick me brains, tell them nout, I say. I thought I'd give myself a treat, so I ordered a joint of butcher meat. When it come it went out but gristle and fat, fit for nout but yon odd cat. If I thought I was going to day tonight, I'd have a square up there. For what some folk have done to me, by gum I'd make them pay. Cause I'd hang a bit ills in Hamilton trees, make them swallow a bit of pill. I wouldn't give them an eighth length of rope to scrap top of a mowdy hill. So I said to Tut, come on, hard lad, I say that things ain't half so bad. Gone and give the hands and face a rub, and I'll give her a run onto Acton pub. While thou gets thy baits and leggings on, I'll gun down straight and get our John. So I went down straight for Tot's mate John. He said, hello, way up, what's on? Sometimes our Tot can act the feel, John said when I'd got him telling me tale. But I'll not turn an eight out down, I'll have a run on to Acton town. I've always thought a lot of Vera, oft wish she lived a little bit nearer. So away I take the twa musketeers to Acton pub for two or three beers. Tot was silver full of dome and gloom, for jovial chat he had near Rome. Then new cat's eyes on the road we saw. Tot had never seen nought like these afore. I said, look here, Tot, what's the think? But further down still his spirit seemed to think. He said, them lates, might be grand fine things of foggy nights. But tell me summat if thou will. Where's going to pay the electric bill? And them Yanks'll learn a lesson very soon, if they think they're going to get it main. For I know well now, as they say, the nearer they get, the further away it will be. So I dropped them off at 7:30, and I said I'd be back at about 11. But I got delayed, and it were after Yan. Out into the pub garden they'd had to gan. We've managed to stay just clear at cops. They laughed as they jump in like twa wicklops. Tot said those always been a friend to me, so I'll tell thee a thing or twa, as they say. If ever thou gannest a hedge to lay, take this advice and they'll make it pay. Cut rather mair than three parts through, then ax thee split down is what to do. Lay it up the hill and stake it well. £8 a churn would be a fair deal. And when thou gannest to build a wall, make it 4 feet 6 to 5 foot tall. Start a yard wide and batter into the foot. In every square yard a thrust stane put. In bottom half of the wall, twa thirds of the stane. Put a gap of twa up and thou'll see and learn. Now all the way home, Tot gave his advice. I take it all in, he didn't have to say twice. Now for 40 odd years it stood me in good stead, cos with edging and walling I've a pund or two made. So what cheered Tot up in Acton town? Good company and Newcastle Brown.
That is very, very well written and recited.
I like the bit about the wall and the edging as well.
Yeah. Is that published anywhere, that poem?
No.
Well,
Do you call a poem anything? It's got a title.
No. I just call that Ad Tot.
And Tot was a fella you went to see.
Yeah, aye, he was an old village character. He went to Ecton Irons when he was young.
Did he?
Gosh.
When they were on.
Yeah.
And then one year he never went. He walked all the way to Upsall to see his brother who worked for Turton's.
To Upsall?
Upsall, yeah.
That's a good walk.
Yeah. And his brother said to him, "How's they getting hired, Tot?" He said, "No," he said, "I haven't been." And his brother said, "Well, what's he going to do?" He said, "Well," he says, "I was going to lay edges for anybody who wants them laying. And then I'll go back to America House for daytime and harvest next year." And that's what he did, and he was more or less self-employed from then on.
Right.
Mm. Gamekeeper in Edge Lane, woodman, and a real good old-fashioned character.
Did he ever marry?
He never married, no. And he lived in lodgings most of his life, and he said, he thought he wanted a house of his own. So he saw a job offered with a cottage to go with it. And he said to his boss, which was Lord Tranmere, he said, "I'm thinking about leaving. I've got offer of a job with a house with it." And Lord Tranmere said, "Well," he said, "I wouldn't like you to leave, Tot." He said, "If you chose a site and anywhere on Roxby Estate, I'll build you a house." So Tot said, "Aye, right o then. I will do." And Tot did show us a site, and Mr. Turton did build him a house.
Mm.
And it's down there at Roxby now. It's a Scandinavian design. A little white cottage called Whitecroft.
Oh, we passed that today.
Yeah, and that was built. That was built for Tot.
That's a good story.
It's a good term. What was his surname, do you know?
Welford.
That was Welford?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jack America's. Jack America's half-brother he was.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So,
So
he lived there until he got too old, and then he went to live with his niece at Upsall.
That was his last days over there, was it?
Yeah, he ended his days over there. So,
Is he buried over there then?
He's buried at Kirby Knowles near Upsall.
Right.
There's a few more of these to do, which aren't so interesting as your stories, I'm afraid, but we have to deal with them.
Let me get my glasses on.
I think we're starting there, right. I think.
What do you call a room in a house for storing food, Clive?
Pantry.
If you haven't eaten any food for a long time, you're bound to feel...
starved.
Right. What words do you use for something to eat? General words, you know.
Grub.
Yep.
Grub, yeah. What do you call a coffee pot, you might get from a cafe with lots of milk in it?
Milky.
Right. What's the dairy product that you spread on toast and sandwiches?
Water.
Which word or phrase would you use to indicate a temporary break in a game when points cannot be scored?
No idea.
Well, all I thought of was half-time, but I don't know what it means.
If you fall over in a playground, your knee might be... what?
Scrubbed.
If you got covered in dirt at the playground, when you got home, you might need to get in the...
bathtub.
Yeah. when children are excited, you might say they're full of
beans.
At the end of a long and tiring day, you'd say you were absolutely...
Aye, what you were thinking.
Well, I said, I've lost my place now. Which word would you use to mean not attending school?
Nicking off.
Nicking off, yeah. That's what we used to say, even in Durham. Sometimes when children are being very naughty, their parents tell them that someone will come and take them away. What do you call this mysterious person?
Devil.
You grow crops and raise animals on a
farm.
It's an easy one for you.
Aye.
When you walk in the countryside after heavy rain, your shoes get covered in
muck.
Yeah. When driving in icy or wet weather, you must take care because the roads are
slip.
Slip.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah, is that?
It's a
local word.
It is, yeah. Yeah,
A good one. That one. Which word do you use as a term of endearment, even with strangers? Yeah.
Hello.
Sorry.
If I met a stranger, I would just say hello to him.
Yeah, yeah. It's a funny question, that.
I know what they're getting at. Mm. If they just left it at
without
which
the
word do you
bit.
Use
yeah.
as a term of endearment, what would you...
Well, I don't know. We never learnt words like endearment at Roxby School.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say pet or love or... I don't like that.
Well, I might do, but you've got to be careful what you say nowadays.
Which word would you use to refer to someone as very attractive?
Good looking.
Yeah. What is your word for spreading rumours?
I can't think of one.
Right. A picture not hanging straight is hanging...
Croaked.
Croaked, right. What do you call a very small piece of wood that has got into your finger?
Spell.
Right, we used to call them spugs. Mm. What do you call a person who mends shoes and boots?
Cobbler.
Right. And do you have any other words you'd like to tell us about? Which was what I was asking earlier. Do you have any favourite dialect words? Or?
I think because you use them all our life, you don't think of them as different, do you?
No.
They're just everyday words to us.
Yeah.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
If you were very hot on a hot day, what would you, you know, like?
You'll just say you're boiling hot. But, I don't know. I think that's an interesting word for being busy, is strong.
Strong, yeah.
You're used to often be met by someone down village, some of the old folks, and they used to say, are you strong?
Strong,
yes, yeah.
Are you busy?
That's a good one, though. I've got a dialect book at home. I'll have to
see if that's in.
Have a look and see if that's in. But, that's been fascinating, that, Clive. It's been very good.
Yes, I don't know. Oh, are we going to stop now? Yep.
Well,
is there anything else you want to tell
anything
us?
Anything else you want to say about?
No, I think we've covered quite a few things.
I mean,
I found it really interesting.
When you mentioned the old chap, Tot Welford.
Aye.
Tot's a nickname, isn't it?
Thomas was his name.
All right, right.
Aye.
Thomas. Right, okay. Fine. Yeah?